Superchargers, headlights, and more. With over 122 million parts, eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Stay on your A-game with all the parts you need at the prices you want. It's easy to bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
NMLS number 65084, equal housing lender. Woo!
As an adult, don't we all miss spring break? Nothing like taking a week off from all your responsibilities. Well, here's the next best thing for adults, a spring break from house payments. SaveWithConrad.com can help you get rid of all your credit card debt just like that. We're routinely helping our listeners save $500, $600, $700, even $800 a month. And you don't need perfect credit or money out of your pocket to do this, but check this out, no house payments for 2 months at SaveWithConrad.com.
What's up, Airheads? Welcome back, everybody. We're in the virtual Airstream studios. I'm Chey, and that's Corey.
Hey, buddy.
I wanted to start. I know it's totally unnecessary, and I don't know what kind of feedback we got off of it because, you know, you to keep rid of feedback or whatever. But, right. Like, last week, whole world captivated by the Titanic sub situation, right? And I'm recorded.
I'm just now getting over it myself.
We recorded earlier in the week than we normally do. It had literally just became a story like the day we recorded. And so I listened to that part of the episode again to see. I was like, I wonder how like off we were. And so we weren't off about everything, but like I felt like it was weird listening to the episode after knowing what had happened to him. And mm-hmm. In the episode, we never even brought up the possibility of like implosion or none of that type of stuff. It was all like, yeah, they're either floating on the surface somewhere or they're stuck alive beneath the briny deep and all this stuff that like, by the time it came out, everybody knew weren't the case. Yeah. And I just felt sort of weird about it, felt sort of dumb about it. I just want to remind everybody that the context in which we recorded that, but it was like, it's funny. It was just a matter of days, but it was already horrifically out of date by the time
Weird too. Cause like, I feel like I knew the whole time that there was a possibility of implosion. I mean, the only thing I can think of is that, like, I learned that the second we stopped recording. Cause it, you know what I mean? Cause, like, I don't know. I felt like I knew that shit. But, like, this is, and I would like to apologize because this is, in my knowledge, the first time on this show that we have ever gotten a thing wrong.
Wrong.
Like,
yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, usually we are just the harbingers of truth and accuracy. Uh-huh. And I feel horrible that we've let our fans down. And now that pure correctness will not be our legacy.
I know it is a shame, but, you know, it had to come to an end sometime. Our
streak,
our campaign of
honesty
and accuracy. But what are you going to do? Speaking of what are you going to do? What are you going to talk about today?
I'm going to talk about one Hetty Green, a.k.a. the Witch of Wall Street, a.k.a. the richest bitch it ever was.
Okay. Well, that's wild. I don't know nothing about it. I didn't know that. What time frame was this?
Civil War.
What?
I did not. I know.
I was going to say I didn't know they allowed women to do any of that. And I meant like before 1982 or whatever. You know?
No, it's crazy, dude.
Okay. Well, goddamn.
Yeah.
That sounds wild. I don't really know what I'm talking about.
That's good.
Figure we'll just, yeah, sort of find it along the way. I've got a number of random things. You ever see somebody's got a job and you like, how'd that job be? You know what I mean? Like,
dude, honestly, especially in the industry that we work in, a ton. Yeah. But there's so many times that I'm on a set doing something that somebody else say their title and I'm like, I don't even have a fucking clue. But yeah, in the world, like, especially in the world of like finance, you know, like there's so many things, and I can't give you an example off top, but like that, if you told me what their job title was and put a gun to my head and said, name three things that this motherfucker does on a day-to-day basis, you'd have to blow my brains against the back of the wall.
Yeah, I'm now realizing it's a couple of different things. Some of them are like jobs where it's like, I get what the job is, and I'm just utterly fascinated by how you find yourself having that job.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's another category for which I still am fascinated by how you find yourself having that job, but also I'm like, how is that a job itself?
Right.
In the first category, for example, like I think something like, you know, like a stunt man or something, right? Like I get what a stunt man do, but how do you like fall into stunt man, and no pun intended? Well, I mean, the pun was a little bit intended. I knew that it was coming, but so like how that work?
I'm glad that you brought that up. The only, because I actually can now add to my multi-hyphenate stunt driver, because I did some of that this weekend. And do you know, Trey, and this blew my mind, that the only requirement, do you know what the requirement for being a stunt driver is?
Don't be blind.
A driver's license. Like that's it. Like that's, you know, that's it, is a driver's license. But yeah, I'm with you. The only thing I can, like, I don't know about stunt man, but stunt driver I kind of get, because it's like, okay, you're a kid and you're fascinated with cars and you want to drive, but maybe you weren't good enough for NASCAR. So like, that's the route you took. But like,
but how do you take that route? What do you
do? I don't
know. You come to Hollywood and you like hang around sets and you're like, hey, I can drive, just so you know. Like,
yeah,
you want to come watch me, you know, fucking cut some donuts in that parking lot over there.
Right.
I can, you know, kind of prove it to you. Watch me drift a little bit. Like, I feel like it's got to be it's always like, it's all about who you know. I feel like so many of those jobs are like,
oh yeah,
people had family members or friends of family or something that did it, and then they got into it that way and like learned on the job how to do that stuff. But even that's like, there had to be a first one at some point.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
where did person come from? Like, it was like they're making silent films and they need to throw somebody off of a building or whatever. And there was, you know,
this guy can fall.
Some slack jawed grip standing there. And he's like, I'll do it. Right.
Yeah. Right.
And then now, like, and now that dude's great grandkids are still out here doing it, or, you know, I mean, what?
Yeah, because that's a great point, because the difference in stunt driver and stunt man is like, you get how someone gets to be good at driving. We all have to drive. But like, when was the moment that someone was like, holy shit, I'm really good at making it look like I just got hurt, but I didn't actually get hurt. You know what I mean? Because like, you watch some of these movies with these stuntmen, like, dude, they're falling down stairs and like tumbling down stairs. And like, you know, like, don't get me wrong, I'm certain that they're sore just like a normal person, but it's like, they're not going to the hospital for 2 weeks like I would have. Otherwise they would spend their entire life in the hospital. Like, they know how to fall. And there's only one way to get good at anything, and that's by fucking putting your 10,000 hours in, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. It's odd. But in the other category of like, not only do I not understand how you come to find yourself doing that job, I'm also like, how is that a job?
Right.
And very on brand for POA. Do you know that water sommeliers exist?
Get the fuck out of here. Now,
yeah.
Okay. I'll tell you this. There's only one water that when I drink it, I go, I don't care for this water. And that's like, I don't think we're sponsored by them, but like Dasani, I can definitely tell a difference between Dasani and all the other waters. But after that, it's water. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know. I agree. He's the main guy. His name's Martin Reese, or right, R-I-E-S-E.
Reese,
But he's been on like Nat Geo and shit like that. And he's a water sommelier. And if you like, let's see here. Yeah. It's there's a YouTube video on Nat Geo's YouTube page. It says he tastes water like some taste wine.
It should be pointed out that those people are full of shit, and we've proved it on this show.
Right. BuzzFeed did a thing where they found some water lovers for him, and he got 15. So this is the type of stuff he brings to the table, literally. He brought some 15,000-year-old iceberg water. So,
like from Waterboy, that's a part of the plot of Waterboy.
he's got that good, I guess. You can sign up. I don't think he had many takers. God damn it, where did it go? I can't find it now. He had a place on here on his website.
Well, while you're looking for it, I'll posit to you that, like, obviously what it is that he's doing is, like, he can taste and discern the different minerals that are in certain types of water. Is that it? Like, he can taste something and be like, ooh, this one's very rich in iron, or this one has... Because, like, you know, mineral water is a thing, and I'd always heard mineral water my whole life and never even really thought about what the fuck that meant. But like, yeah, there's some people that like, they will only drink mineral water. It's like water, you know, just plain water that don't have any minerals in it. Like, what good is that? And it's like, to hydrate you and to refresh you, I guess. But so I guess he can taste like the rocks.
I guess so. Yeah. And I did find there's an article with him, or like written by him, I guess, that kind of explains how he came to be a water sommelier. And this is what I'm saying. Like, these people, they always like, I feel like you look into it, and essentially the answer is like they fell bass ackwards into it at some point. Right. So he says, in 2005, I took a job in Berlin at a Michelin starred restaurant. And one night a guest came up to me and said, so Martin, you have over 1500 different wine labels, but just one water brand. I don't like that water. What else can you offer me? I looked at him and realized in the restaurant business, it's all about options. And while we offer a selection of liquors, beers, and wines, when it comes to water, it's just sparkling, flat, or tap. Not even the brand of water is given. It occurred to me that we have to give people options when it comes to the healthiest beverage on this planet. And thus, I created my first water menu. The first floor water menu debuted in 2006. Since then, I've exhaustively read and studied water. In 2009, I wrote a book called Die Welt ist Wasser, which translates to the world of water.
We should speak German. We need to both learn it and be fluent in it. Like, can you imagine how many more arguments we would win with our wives if we spoke fluent German? You can't touch that shit. Uh-huh. Like, if you get cussed out in German, you're fucking going home.
This is barely related. You mentioned us speaking German and our wives, and it reminded me, I'm of English descent, right? I did that 23. Mm-hmm. I knew that about myself, and then 23andMe confirmed it. I'm like 51% English, and I'm 49% other types of white people, you know?
Trash.
It's like 51% English and then like 30-something percent Scotch or Irish or whatever, and then like very small percentages of like spaghetti people or frog people. Right.
Definitely got some spaghetti people in you because of you look Greekish and Italianish in a way.
Your hair color.
Yeah, just the way that you're... Or Iranian. You could be Iranian.
And this is also... What about a Jewish?
Jew. Yeah, Jew too. You got some Jew. In a good way.
Jews. No, I've been told that before, but apparently not a lick of Jew in me.
Really?
According to 23andMe anyway, yeah, no Jew. But
according to the internet, you're 100% Jewish.
I know, yeah, right. Yes, I've been accused of being a secret Jew on many occasions. But even fans of mine have told me, I remember a dude, speaking of spaghetti people, a dude in New Jersey specifically who was a fan after a show was like, and this is pretty much, I'm exaggerating a little bit, but it's pretty much how he talked. Yeah, right. He's like, you know, you don't really look like a redneck to me. You look like a Nebuchadnezzar Jew. That's what you look like. And I was like, thank you.
Had to say Nebuchadnezzar.
Nebuchadnezzar, yeah.
Couldn't just say you look like a Jew. It's a specifically, you look like a Nebuchadnezzar Jew. Is that a slur? Nebuchadnezzar?
I don't know. Let's look it up real quick. I feel like they themselves, they use it. Of course, I mean, you're allowed to use words about your own.
You know, we're always trying to add to our Rolodex of slurs. So
it's just so funny. When he said it, I was just like, yeah, I do kind of look like that out here. Cause it's like, I've never heard anyone else described as Nebushi other than a Jewish person. Have you?
Me either. That's why I'm thinking it's a slur.
So I just, in my head, I was like, oh yeah, a little Woody Allen-y or whatever, which is Nebushi. Not like, you don't want that, you know, nowadays. But anyway, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's Nebushi.
I never actually
in my
looked
brain.
It up. Okay, I just now looked it up, and the definition of it is of Nebush is a person, especially a man, who is regarded as pitifully ineffectual, timid, or submissive. So, yeah, I'd say it's pretty, you know, bad.
Yeah,
I'm like retroactively pissed off about it.
I bet that guy.
I thought it just meant kind of like nervousy or whatever. Yeah. You know
which
what I mean?
Did too.
Like has a nervous energy about you, which I mean,
But you're right, though, in that I've never in my life heard anyone go, oh, he's a Nebushi Italian man, or he's a Nebushi what? It's always a Nebushi Jew. Yeah. And it's like, and to me, I've heard Woody Allen described that way. And I was like, okay, so, you know, Woody Allen's got that for sure.
It's because that apparently is because it's specifically. Nebush derives from a Yiddish word, Nebuch. You got to clear your throat when you say them Yiddish words, meaning poor or unfortunate. The journey from Yiddish to English wasn't accomplished in a single bold leap, but over many, many years. So it's like it's of Jewish origin, the word
Nebush.
Hey,
speaking of Jewish people, I would like to say happy birthday. Today, as we're recording, is Mel Brooks' birthday. Our good buddy Mel Brooks.
How old is he now? 100?
Oh, he'd have to be because he was like 96 when we hung out with him. So he's definitely at least 100. So yeah, happy birthday to, in my opinion, the best to ever do it in the comedy entertainment world, Mel Brooks. Now back to Jew stuff.
Yeah. So Nebush is like, it's of Jewish, or Nebush, sorry. I saw Yiddish and Nebush at the same time. Nebush is of a Jewish origin as a word, the etymology of it. So,
and you do look nervous in front of crowds and stuff, I guess, because we're both kind of that way. But I don't see you as a pitiful person. Like, that's kind of fucked up.
Yeah, I remember I've told this story before on here, but it's like...
If anything, you're a hitting Jew.
This dude said, the dude in when we did those shows in London, he was talking about how different he noticed I was on stage and off stage. I didn't know this guy was watching me. But he had saw me on stage and then stuck around and watched me just like live in the world after that.
Do not recommend.
I didn't know anyone was doing.
Yeah.
And he was like an Irish guy, and he told me that. He was like, you know, you had a great stage presence and you did a great job up there and you're very funny and all that. And but I've seen you, you know, around here since, and I've noticed you're obviously
nervous.
Nervous was one of them. Serious? Quiet?
Yeah, yeah.
I can't remember if it was serious skittish? Or not. It was something. It wasn't skittish. It was, you're obviously a very serious. Fuck.
You know what, though?
It was another word. It was something, and he's like, you're obviously a very serious and nervous person, but I don't think it was serious, though. I think it was like, wasn't scared or nothing like that. It was like,
I've never met a comedian, by the way, whose onstage personality wasn't, I'm not going to say totally the opposite of them in real life, but like when you're on stage, that's the most confident that you can be. If you weren't confident, you wouldn't be the fuck up there. But like, then when you get in front of everybody and you're not on stage, especially after you perform, like you're kind of like, you know, looking over your shoulders and like,
well,
oh, am I in the right
spot? Adrenaline rushing through
dude.
Your blood, your veins. And then after there's a weird kind of like come down period or whatever. Yeah. And it's odd.
It's very naked feeling when you go back into the crowd and you've done a thing because like you don't know every single person you see. It's a possibility that they hated you. And like, you know that, you know what I mean?
Dale says apparently Mel Brooks is 97.
Okay.
BPP says he's 97.
Okay. Happy birthday, Mel. Happy 97th.
Yeah. Anyway, maybe it was serious. You're obviously a very serious and nervous person.
I know he said serious.
Yeah, well, I know he said nervous, so it was serious and nervous person. Anyway, and he was kind of fascinated by that. But yeah, so, and I know I'm that way. So when the dude said nebbishy, I just interpreted it that way. But then actually looking up the definition for the first time, fucking pitifully ineffectual, timid, or submissive is,
don't hit.
You know, not a good look, but
that ain't it. Well, it's possibly the New Jersey man didn't quite know the definition of it either.
Yeah, he was a spaghetti person, I'm pretty sure. So he don't know G words, but or he's aware of them, but he don't know what they mean. Possibly, I don't know.
Just
anyway,
like us.
Yeah, right. That was fuck. How did I even get to that? I'm all
over. We were talking about jobs,
German stuff.
Yeah, and then naturally that led to Jewish stuff.
No, I was talking about my 23andMe. No, we'll get back to that in a minute.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of the hunt. But are you getting the thrill of the best deals? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Macy's, Adidas, Walmart, Nike, Wine.com, Samsung, Lenovo, Sephora, and more. And even stack sales on top of cashback. It's easy to use, and you get your cash back through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
The 23andMe, it's, over 50% English, and I'm some percentage, you know, Irish and whatever else, and then just other types of white people, not much German or anything. Katie is also mostly English, right? And Crowder is an English name, and Wooten is an English name, right? But when we were getting married, there was some discussion of, like, is she going to change her last name? I'm definitely not changing mine, obviously, but, is she going to change hers? Is she going to, like... is it going to be a hyphenate situation? And we, in thinking of that, we realized oddly you got two pretty fucking English names, Wooten and Crowder. But if you were Wooten to hyphenate Crowder. Them, it sounded very
German,
kind of Sig Heil or whatever. You know,
yes, it does. German,
like Katie Wooten Crowder.
Crowder.
Yeah, right. And
it sure does. I'm glad y'all didn't do that.
Yeah, well, we shot that down immediately upon realizing that. But anyway, yeah, we should. I've heard before. I feel like I've heard conflicting things about German as a language in terms of like, I feel like I've heard it's like it's kind of easy for English speakers to learn, relatively speaking, obviously. Uh-huh. And I've heard
they're
like,
right there.
Because English is a Germanic language,
right?
Or whatever.
Yeah, England spoke Germanic first before the English language was like the people from there, because, you know, Germany had, it was all Germany ruled, and then some shit happened. And actually all back then, I can't remember which king it was, but there was a king that finally changed it. But like, even when they were firmly the English, the language of law, it was always Latin, right?
Yeah,
everywhere right. used that. That was the language of law, and they finally changed it to English. They're like, we know some people, and the reason of that is because basically everyone on Earth was encouraged to learn Latin, so that if you come from two different speaking places, it's like, okay, we'll just speak Latin because we both know that one. You know what I mean? And then he was like, look, we're all firmly English. Some of y'all still speak German, which don't hit for us. So the rule of law is now English. So learn fucking English. Don't press two for German, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
I pulled that out of my butt, by the way.
Well, Latin was like the official language of educated people, right?
Yes. It's
like
yes.
If you were from money or privilege or whatever, and you got any kind of formal education, you were going to learn Latin, and that was true yeah. around at least the whole Western world.
Yeah, so, yeah. And it just worked out really good, because it's like you can't know every language, but if everyone knows two, theirs and Latin, you can communicate with anybody.
Right, and I think you said this already, but that's like it. That's sort of how English now works today.
Yeah, it does. English is the business language.
Yeah, right. It's like most people, and that hits for like dipshit Americans like
yes,
us.
Yes, it hits for us really hard.
Because if the official language of bit, you know, you go pretty much anywhere and you go anywhere where they deal in global business or any kind of anything remotely like that, whatever country you're in, they're going to speak that language and they're also going to speak English. 100%. And so that hits for us, because if that second language for the whole world was like, if Hitler would have won, we'd have better problems. But like if that second language was German or something,
we'd be fucked.
That wouldn't hit, you know, you couldn't go nowhere.
No, that would not hit.
You go to Italy, try to speak spaghetti, and then they default instead to fucking
hyphy schnitzel. Hyphy.
Yeah, hyphen, hyphen. Yeah, right. And then like ooh. That don't do nothing for me. But as it stands, they'll default to, you know, ketchup instead.
I don't want this necessarily.
Us.
I don't want this necessarily to break off into a conversation about what our favorite fusion restaurants are. However, I'm fine with it. But I was just thinking, you know, it's like we got Tex-Mex and then they've got all sorts of different types of fusion. German Italian would really hit for me, like a schnitzel on top of some really good pasta. That'd be fire.
Yeah, I could see that. I saw somebody that there's this, I don't ever get on Instagram or keep up with any influencers or content creators at all, but there is one dude I sent you. He's a food content creator in England, in London, I believe. And I said, it's like, I'm not at all gay, but I'd enter into a relationship with this man if he was cooking for me every night. That's how hard he hits.
I believe your quote yesterday was suck him dry for that pork.
I think I just said fuck him, but still it's the same.
Suck him empty, I believe, is what you said. Yeah.
Because also he's not bad to look at either.
Oh, he's a great looking guy.
And which kind of pisses me off, because like
he's got it all.
I don't know how he ain't fat is my thing.
Yeah.
Like because he eats his own food at the end of it anyway. It's his account. It's a huge one. So some of y'all, I'm sure, know it. It's called Notorious Foodie. And
it's a great
one. He's like the only one who shit I want. Like, I'm not, no hyperbole. He's literally the only person.
Well, every now and then.
On the whole internet, he's the only guy.
Every now and then you watch Thomas Straker, but that's because I send you his stuff. He's my butter guy.
Okay.
He's the one that does that all things butter. I would highly recommend him too for anybody out there who's like super into food videos.
Anyway, the Notorious Foodie, he did like it was sort of like a chicken parm sub, but it was with chicken schnitzel, I believe. I forgot that right the other day. So that was I said when we were in England we had Angla Bangla. That was
good. Oh yeah, we did. I fucking loved Angla Bangla. That was like a very nice surprise. I was actually talking yesterday about, you know, I know that we had mentioned it when we first got back from England, which by the way is relevant because this week you will be hearing more from us because we're about to start promoing our book that we writ while we's over there.
I mean, by the time you hear this, we will have announced it already. So, I mean,
I
guess we could talk about that if you want to.
Yeah, I would love to.
Think about it.
Yeah, I would love to. At the Angla Bangla, like I was talking to somebody about it the other day. And they were talking about English food and yada, 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 and what the stereotype of how their food is not that good. And I was like, yeah, I mean, we found that to be true. Like, the standard is not as good. But however, when it was good, it was like some of the best shit I ever had in my life. Like, I had two or three items over there that I think about all the time. And Angla Bangla is one of them.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I'm trying to think. Like, remember those
croquettes?
Yeah, it's exactly. That's exactly.
Dude, fuck,
exactly,
do I remember those croquettes? I'm touching my dick right now.
Yeah, they were ox cheek croquettes, right?
Oh, God, dude. Oh.
Yeah. Which, if y'all don't know what croquettes are, they're like fried tater balls with stuff that hits in the middle of it.
Ooh.
And in this case, the stuff that hits was like braised ox cheek. That was at
it was so good. It was at the hotel we stayed at. That was
the Hound and the Hare, right?
Yeah, at the hotel.
So, yeah. So, we were in the English countryside, which is lovely. Lovely. It's called the Cotswolds. And it's like, I wrote a whole thing in the book about how, like, country means something very different in England than it means here. Over there, it's like fancy and parochial in a nice way and everything. And anyway, we're at this little country inn called the Hound and Hare, or Hare and Hound, or something like that. And I wrote in the book that we walked in and the front desk clerk was a Great Dane with like a Sherlock cap on and a pipe in his mouth. It was
pretty
just true. It was that kind of place. But anyway, they had these ox cheek croquettes that were delicious.
And what was the Anglebanga meal that we ate? I don't remember what it consisted of.
Oh, buddy, I don't know because I didn't recognize what the, it was like, it was, you know, it was like Indian fusion food, but I don't know. I can't speak eloquently enough about, Indian food to, you know, to call out what it was. Also, it's been too long, but it was like, it was a place with a Michelin star.
Yeah.
And so it was a like bunch a of tasting different curries. Menu. It was like a tasting menu. So they brought us a bunch of different things. Yeah. Curries and things of that nature, but non-traditional ones. And it was fire.
It was absolutely fire. Dude, remember how awesome, like, just the basket of bread and chips was? Like, they could have just done that. Like, it was fucking, it was great, man. Big fan of that type of fusion, but I'm saying, I really do think that the German Italian, that'd be good.
So do you want to, you want to talk about the book a little bit?
I would.
We can talk about the book a little bit and then you can go ahead and do your thing. See, I'm loving this. Here's what I'm doing. I'm trying every week. I'm coming into it with some things in my back pocket, but I'm hoping to do what we've been doing, which is just, I get through in a way that, I mean, well, one of the things in my back pocket today was water sommelier. And we did talk about that, and that took us, you know, that's on brand. That makes sense for the show. So.
Of course it does.
Anyway.
It would be nice if I could remember the landing page that I'm supposed to talk about for the book. Wouldn't that be good?
Well, you can find it on all of our social media pages and things of that nature.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, you can check how to pre-order, find out about the book. For those of you that are just tuning in and you haven't listened to the old episodes, me and Trey wrote a book called Round Here and Over Yonder. And the consensus of the book is that part of it, which really relates to this show, is we went to the UK and we hung out there and we wrote about our experiences there. What we have in common, what we have different. We also wrote about our beloved home, the South, and the other areas in the U.S., which was, it was fucking awesome. I can't believe it's time for this sumbitch to come out. Can you?
Well, I'm not going to lie.
Yeah,
it seems
like a while now.
It's been a long time, dude. Yeah,
that's true.
Like, we sold this book in like the height of the pandemic. Like,
that's true.
I don't know if we had sold it by the end of 2020, but like the process got set in motion, like pre-vaccines, height of the pandemic stuff. We were writing.
I hadn't even thought about that. That's true.
Took the trip that we wrote about over a year ago. Now, you know, like it's been a long. I don't mean it to sound like it's long, as in it don't hit for me.
No, it was great.
But I mean, it has been a long, drawn out process. So I mean, I can sortly believe it. Yeah,
that's true. And we did. And yeah, if you're someone that works at HarperCollins, just know that we've loved you the entire long and drawn out process, and you've been great. That's how we did the book for, and we're very, very fucking lucky. But yeah, y'all can pre-order it now. I'm super pumped, dude. We've written two. Actually, technically, I guess we've both written 2/3 of a book. If you want to break it down that way, you know what I mean. Like
what's 1/2 plus 2/3? That's 3/6. Or no, 1/2 plus 1/3. That's 3/6 plus. We have each individually written 5/6 of one book, which is pretty good.
That's not bad. I never thought I'd do that.
That's like you, because we wrote the first book, me, you, and Drew, so we each wrote one third of a book. And then me and you wrote this one, just the two of us. So that means you and I have each now written one half of a book, one half plus one third, I believe is, yeah, 5/6. So we've each written 5/6 of a book, which, like I said, pretty good.
Okay. Well, yeah, good for us, man. I didn't
kind of a bummer that we had to like sell a whole nother book just to get past having written, you know, one whole book each.
I know. You know what I'm saying? But if everybody out there will buy it, we will be afforded that opportunity.
All right. It's a travelogue, basically. It's a collection of essays about our travels. And we've had most of them were domestic in nature. But as part of writing this, you know, the process of writing this book, we went across the pond to the lands of our origin, England and Scotland, and wrote about that. So that's pretty much the whole. Obviously, it's filtered through our perspective. So a lot of it has to do with, you know, stereotypes, expectations versus reality, that type of stuff. But yeah, it's a good time. And I think above all else, it should hopefully be funny to read.
Dude, it's funny.
Yeah,
it's funny. It's entertaining. And it's just a lot of fun. I mean, I would say that, especially because of the way we wrote it, like we've written both of our books, it's segmented and it's perfect to put on the back of your turlet. You know what I'm saying? And
that is, that's a good point. It's the type of book like our first book was, where you can pick it up and put it back down very easily. Hell, you can skip around, you know,
right,
if you want to. I don't think that, you know, necessarily would be the way to go, but you could if you
wanted to. I definitely
think
there's going to be some people who they're
right
going
to the part where they're from.
Exactly. And then go back and read. Cause like, that's what I would fucking do.
And I'm not going to lie. I was telling you about it the whole time. I was like pretty worried throughout the whole process of writing this, that like people who were from, like, we don't cover literally every single place in this country. It's broken up into segments. There's like a Midwest section, a Pacific Northwest section, things of that nature. And then we talk about like places within those, like Chicago or Portland or whatever, that type of thing. But we don't cover it literally everywhere. But I've just been worried that like people from Chicago, for example, would read the Chicago part and be like,
"That ain't it.
I don't know what the fuck he's on about." And that idea really bothered me.
Yeah, and
I hope
got over
that
it.
Doesn't happen. Well,
I talked
to people from every place I wrote. I interviewed people who actually were born and raised in all the places that I wrote about to try to combat that. So I'd like to say that I'm at least pretty confident that it won't be too off the mark.
Well, first off,
people
get
very defensive about where they're from.
No, they do. Of course. I understand it. But even if you got it 100%.
Our editor got defensive about the part I wrote about her hometown.
Yeah, yeah.
Even while knowing that was like a thing that I was like concerned about, you know what I mean? It's like,
yes, so, Bessie, if you're listening, that really made me mad. I forgave you, but I was like, God damn it. You have no idea how he's already in his fucking head about this.
It was the worst possible thing she could have said.
I was spiral.
Cause I was I was like, this is exactly the thing that I am most worried about.
I was just never really worried about it, for the simple fact of like, listen, even if you were 100% correct, there's going to be people who are like, fuck you, bullshit. But secondly, I'm like, this book is written from our perspective. And when you're writing something from your perspective, you can't be wrong. You know what I mean? Like, you can, but like, it's not, I'm not someone who grew up there. I'm someone who's fucking passing through, and this is what I thought. You know what I mean? I'm not writing a biography of your goddamn city. I'm telling you what my things were when I was there. Me and you are just two different people, though. I'm more easygoing. Right.
Okay, but like, for example, like when somebody tells you, like that lady in Winter Park that time who was like, she's like from a fucking 99% white community in fucking white ass Colorado. And she was talking about how she literally said verbatim, "I drove through the South once on my way to Florida, and I could not believe how insanely racist the whole South is," or whatever.
Yeah.
Right. Like, that don't piss you off?
Yeah.
That type of thing.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I mean. Like, I get it. I get it. Cause like,
yeah, I get it too. It's just like, what are you going to do?
Yeah, I don't know. It just, I don't want to be that lady, is what I'm saying.
No, I hear you.
But I think I've avoided being that lady, though. I'd like to think.
I would like to think that I did measures. Too.
You just, yeah. Well, you were just like, no, it'll hit. And then, you know, and I'm sure you did hit. That's what I'm saying. That's what's going to happen. It's going to end up hitting just fine. Yeah.
Well, I didn't shit on anybody, though, except for maybe Salt Lake City. Yeah. Not the people, but just some stuff. There's you'll read it in the book, but dude, like, that's completely different though. Like, that is one of the most ignorant things a human, like, most people, even people who haven't been to the South, know that it's not that goddamn palpable. You know what I mean? You can't just drive through. Now, granted, if you drive through parts of it, if you see a bunch of rebel flags, which that is considered racist, like, I can totally understand it. But like, dude, that lady was a dumb fucking bitch. Remember all the other shit she said?
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean?
I mean, dude, fuck that lady. I talk about that lady and tell the story of meeting that lady probably once every 2 weeks. Ever since I met her, because of how wild the shit she said was. But anyway.
I would just like to hope that, like, there's not a lot of that ladies out there buying the book. You know what I mean? But yeah, no, I get it, dude. I'm super defensive. And like, but another thing I was thinking about was, like, you know, we both wrote a part on our hometowns. I wrote a part on Chickamauga. There's no one here that grew up in Chickamauga more than me. You know what I mean? I did. You can't have, and I still fucking live here. Right. And I know that there's going to be some people from Chickamauga that are like, this ain't it at all. And it's like, yeah, it was for me. You know what I mean?
Right.
That's how I experienced it.
Yeah. That's another thing. Like, on that note, I remember once we were all in New York. I think we were at the New York Comedy Festival, and we're like hanging out at a bar afterwards with a bunch of like Drew's old New York buddies and whatnot. And one of those guys had a guy with him out visiting from Boston. So there's a guy visiting from Boston. Now, this dude, it should be pointed out, is Indian American, right? He's a brown guy from Boston, right? And I hadn't really talked to him or met him, but we're all at this big ass table at the bar together. And I'm talking to like fucking Chaney or Lajeski or somebody like that. And I hear Drew like raising his voice over to my left, right? Like getting into like an argument. And so I sort of
keyed,
I know, right? So I sort of keyed, I'm like, well, this is about to hit, you know, what's going on over here. And but what was happening, because, you know, Drew went to law school in Boston, right?
Yeah.
What was happening was Drew was in an argument with that Indian dude from Boston, because that guy was claiming he was not just claiming that Boston really wasn't a racist city.
Uh-huh.
He was claiming that not only that, but that Boston does not have a reputation for being a racist city.
The first
that was
thing
his argument.
You're allowed to
and
say.
And that's what, and Drew's like, Trey, fucking, you know, and I told him, I was like, listen, dude, I've been to Boston like 3 times. I love it, whatever, but I haven't spent much time. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that Boston is a racist city because I haven't been there that much. I was like, but as far as do people think Boston is a racist city? Like, bro.
Big time.
Absolutely.
Yeah, big time.
It's second only to the South.
Yes.
Like, it's like after the South, Boston is number one in terms of places people think are most racist in this country. But I'm saying, but that guy was a brown guy born and raised in Boston who like insisted that was not true. So like, what are you going to do?
Like, no. But the thing is like, it's totally fine I can't believe that someone as smart as that didn't know that was the reputation. You know what I mean? Cause like you said, like, If he truly had a great experience and didn't feel like it was as racist a place as it,
right.
Like, that's fucking great. And I'm fucking glad for him. But like, bro, like it, like, dude, there's some people that will even be like, bro, y'all think the South is racist. Go to Boston. You know what I mean? Like, they've definitely got that reputation. And yeah, again, to everybody listening to this that's in Boston, I'm not saying all this. I fucking love Boston. You know what I mean? But I'm a white man. So like, I'm comfortable everywhere. Like, Boston is like, I don't know. It's probably in my top 5 cities. DC, you know, being my number one favorite. But I fucking love Boston. But yeah, man, I mean, like, Burr has plenty of bits about how racist people are.
So, but anyway,
do you miss
I do
over
think
there?
It turned out, huh?
Do you miss over
England?
There? Yeah, because I do.
I mean, I definitely want to and plan to like go back probably multiple times over the course of my life. I don't know if I'd say I feel like missing. I mean, I guess you can miss anything. I just like to me. Well, to
Are
me,
you getting mark on me. Can you really even miss something?
Well, to me, I don't know. Missing it implies more like
pining.
I just don't think of missing something that was essentially like a vacation or whatever. Meaning like I miss Tennessee. I sometimes miss,
miss
college. I sometimes miss working in a restaurant or whatever. Like I miss when my sons were little, like real little.
Jesus fucking Christ. You know what Christ. I mean? Yes.
I know what you mean.
Okay.
So,
didn't
so
you
compared
have a good
to all
time?
That stuff.
Should I?
Yes, I had
I'm
a great
not
time.
Compared to all that shit.
I had a great time and I want to go back. But I don't
miss
like,
it.
Like you said, I don't lie awake pining for it or nothing.
Well,
no,
I don't pine.
You sound like you pine. I feel like you're pining over there.
I've
pined. Yeah.
I've pined. I miss Scotland specifically.
Yeah, Scotland's great. Anytime I see Scotland, if I'm watching something, like I've been watching Black Mirror and it's in Scotland, I'm like, oh man, Scotland rules. I want to go back to Scotland. But
and isn't
I'm not
that a
like
cool
actively
thing?
Walking around missing it, though.
Like me and Amber talk all the time about how, like, this is a thing that she pointed out to me, and I was like, "Oh, that does hit. That's really cool." She's like, her favorite thing, one of her favorite things about travel, is she's like, now if I've been to a place and then I watch a show and it's set in that place, she's like, I get so fucking excited to be like, I've been there, or like, holy shit, I know that. And I was like, yeah, you know, me too. And like, she'll do all the time. Like when we watched House of Cards after we'd been in Washington, and she was like so much more enthralled with it because she's like, holy fuck, I knew that street. And I've started finding myself, because I watch a lot of British murder mysteries, and one specific one that I watch is called Shakespeare in Hathaway, and it takes place in Stratford-upon-Avon. And man, every time I watch it, Amber gets so mad at me. I'm like, I sat on that fucking bench right there. That's right in front of the RNC. And maybe that's why I miss it more than you, because I'm enveloped in British television, and so I see it all the time, and I remember how good of a time I had. Also, I live in Chickamauga, Georgia. I miss being somewhere that halfway hit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I get that. Yeah. You watched House of Cards when?
After I had taken Amber to Washington.
But that's been a long time now, right?
Yeah.
So that's pre Spacey's ordeal.
Pre-rape. Yeah, pre-rape. Okay. Well, not pre-rape, pre-us finding out about rape.
Out about the rape, yeah.
Man,
I wasn't
what
make
a bummer.
Any kind of value. I know, dude. He's popped up a couple times for me recently, like just random movies I've watched. Like one of them I know was Margin Call, and the other one was, what was it? There was another one. I just happened, Horrible Bosses, right?
Yeah, which is and like, he rules in it.
But like I just happened to pick two movies to rewatch recently, like on a plane or something. Margin Call's fucking great, by the way. It's about the 2008 financial crisis. It's really good. But just happened to pick two random movies to rewatch recently that he was in, and like, bro,
he's
look,
awesome.
I ain't saying he ought come back.
He should not.
He, you know, put him under the prison or whatever.
But it's
but
a shame.
Like, as far as just like just talent goes, I mean, fucking every head must bow, every tongue must profess.
Yeah.
Man, he was one of the hittinest actors we had.
Ever,
really
dude.
Wish he hadn't done all that raping. It's a real.
I
shame.
Know. Yeah. again, like he did, and that's horrible. And fuck him to death. It's just like, why couldn't it have been any other fucking person?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Why? Because like, yeah, dude, like. You like, and the thing is, like, I do a pretty good job of separating the art from the artist, because, like, dude, you have to, like, have to, because, like, don't get me wrong, not everybody is guilty of what Kevin Spacey was guilty of, but so many of our hitting creators and artists were horrible people, so many. So, like, if you want to enjoy something, you're gonna have to be like, that's not him, that's Kaiser Sose. You know what I mean? Like I do it. I still do it with fucking Hulk Hogan. You know what I mean? Like, people are like, how can you support Hulk Hogan? I'm like, well, I don't really support him. It's just I watch old clips of him. Like, I'm not giving Hulk Hogan any money. But like in my mind, I go, that's not Hulk Hogan didn't do none of that. Terry Bollea did all that shit. Do you understand? Hulk Hogan has and Hulk Hogan's even said this himself. He's like, oh, Hulk Hogan has a 12-inch penis. Terry Bollea does not. You know what I mean?
Is it true that in the world of wrestling, Hulk Hogan didn't hit for people?
Yeah, I mean, Hulk was he's basically the first global superstar
right.
in wrestling. And he wasn't great to work with. He was very protective of his character, which, like, I get, you know, when you're a guy, it's like, you know, there's a reason Tom Cruise doesn't play bad guys a lot. Like, he doesn't want to, because it's like he wants to be the babyface hero. I say this, and Tom Cruise is another one where you're like, well, listen, you got to just put some of that shit aside. You know what I mean? But, like, every time he does play a bad guy, it's great. Now, granted, Hulk Hogan eventually, and this cements him as, I don't know if Hulk Hogan would have been cemented on the Mount Rushmore as easily if he hadn't have turned heel and gone to the NWO, because it made, because a lot of people for a long time were like, well, yeah, it's easy to be great when you don't ever change your gimmick and you're just a white meat baby face and you're just cheering for USA, USA. And then Hulk Hogan, he's arguably the best face that ever lived and the best heel that ever lived. I say that the best heel of all time is Vince McMahon. But I mean, dude, like, you can't take away what Hogan did to wrestling. And I just go, that's Hulk Hogan. Terry Bollea is a piece of shit. You know what I mean? That's a character he played, you know, and it's wrestling, like, the line between real and fake is blurred so much. But, like, to me, I look at it the same way as, like, when I'm watching The Usual Suspects, I go, that's Kaiser Sose that I'm watching right now, you know?
Yeah.
But no, Hulk was not loved by a lot of people. I mean, he was making way more fucking money than everybody. And he just beat their ass every night.
Speaking of making way more fucking money than everybody, I'm dying to hear about this Wall Street witch.
Yeah. You want to hear about her?
I do. Yeah. Never knew this was a thing. Didn't know it could be a thing.
Yeah. And I don't even know how it came on my radar. It probably, honestly, just some sort of Reddit rabbit hole.
Yeah.
That I've gone on, which, by the way, thank you for that. I was never much of a Reddit guy. And then you constantly over the years would send me links. And it was always from Reddit, and it was always something that hit. And I find I was like, I'm not doing it. Like, I'm not. I'll look at the shit that Trey sends. But yeah. I'm not, because, you know, like, the stereotype of Reddit.
Oh yeah.
Is like, you know, you like Reddit. You're a fucking Rick and Morty super fan.
Incel, neckbeard.
Yeah,
basement dwelling, whatever, yeah.
Yeah, and like, I am a Rick and Morty fan, but I don't say that all the time because, like, right. I know the reputation that it has.
Anytime it gets brought up, I feel obligated to always say, I'd be like, just so everybody knows, I lurk on Reddit.
Yeah.
Like, I don't comment, I don't post, I don't actively participate in any of it. I literally just look at the shit that gets upvoted. That's all that I do. Cause it's, you know, it's an aggregator for what's on there. It's called the front page of the internet, which is pretty accurate. So it's like, you just see what's going on the internet at any given time. And a lot of times that shit is either wild or funny or interesting or whatever. And that's what I use it for. But a lot of the stereotypes are absolutely true.
100%, dude.
Digging in the comment sections and stuff, you find some pretty wild shit.
But what's crazy is that's half the entertainment of Reddit. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But like, I'm a proud lurker, just as you are, and it's weird. But like, that's the only piece of social media that me and you are like that with. Like the other ones, we are firm participants in. Like we have to.
You have to be.
And that's why I like being on Reddit more than Twitter and Instagram and stuff. Is because when I'm on Reddit, I have no notifications. I have no DMs. Nothing. It's just like I'm enjoying this the same way some people enjoy Twitter. You know what I mean?
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
What's up, everyone? It's Reality Steve, your number one source for all things Bachelor Nation and reality TV. Every day, I'm giving you the behind-the-scenes juice and your info on all your Bachelor Nation stories and also interviewing some of your favorite reality stars. My name has been synonymous with spoilers, but I'm so much more than that. Give me a listen.
The Reality Steve Podcast, part of the Believe Network. Just search BLEAV on YouTube or wherever you listen.
And like, I don't even fuck with the mothers anymore, but like, yeah. So eventually I was like, I participated in Reddit one time And it was so raven what happened. There's a subreddit called Mildly Interesting that I follow. And so I went to an antique store and I saw this little teeny tiny model of a golf bag, and it was like a paperweight type thing. And I got home only to realize, holy shit, that's a miniature version of my papaw's old golf bag that, like, from the 70s. And I took a picture and was like, you know, I've said that basically. And I was like, I'm going to post this in Mildly Interesting. And so I did. And here's the thing. It actually did really well. And I was like, okay. but my username is not my name. I didn't want anyone to know this is me. I just wanted to see what it was like to post something. So I post that. And I also had earlier posted that on Twitter from my Twitter page. And there was this girl who, like, dude, I got to give it up to her because she was looking out for me. She's DMing me on Reddit going, hey, fuckface. This is how she opens. Hey, fuckface. Are you really just going to go on Corey Forster's Twitter and steal this for fucking Reddit clout? And I was like, this is Corey Forster. And she's like, oh, yeah. Okay. I'm sure that Corey Forster has a Reddit profile that don't hit. Yeah, that checks out. You know what I mean? You don't even have any fucking karma. He would have karma, all this shit. And I was like, no, I swear to God, like, how do I need to prove this to you? She's like, you can't fucking prove this to me, you piece of fucking shit. And I was like, message me on Twitter. So she does. And she's like, hey, by the way, I'm messaging you right now just to let you know that some fucking bag of shit on Reddit is stealing your content and using it to farm karma. And I was like, that's me. And she was like, oh, word. And I was like, good looking out. So that's how that experience went. And I've never done it again. But anyways, that's besides all the points. Hetty Howland Robinson was born November 21st, 1834 in New Bedford, Massachusetts. She would eventually go by Hetty Green. She's the daughter of this dude named Edward Mott Robinson, and he was like, he was a successful whale
applesauce man.
Okay. No, that's funny. I wonder if the Motts did come from him. He was a successful whale merchant, and I specifically didn't look this up because I want to do some stuff out of our butt. When he's in the whaling industry, does that mean to get whales?
It could be. I feel like they'd call him a whaler if he was out there getting the whales.
Right.
He probably was some kind of broker, middleman for like whale oil, you know, or something like that. Cause like a lot of shit back then was lamps and stuff was whale oil. They used whales for a lot of stuff. And then, whaling was a whole big thing.
But like, why do they use whale oil instead? Like, who's the first person that went, we're going to use whale oil instead of like regular oil? I mean, it's a more regenerative thing, I guess.
What kind of regular oil? Like dinosaur oil?
Dinosaur oil, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know when they started pulling all that out. This is like the early 1800s. That was happening, I think, around this same time. Like, whale oil predates our ability to refine dinosaur oil, I think.
Oh, really?
So, I think so. Like, I don't think we were fucking with all that yet. That's part of,
there will be blood.
What kicked off the Industrial Revolution and everything was like us figuring dinosaur oil out. You know?
You just think to me that it would have been easier, like you would have stumbled upon that first because drilling into the earth seems like an easier thing in the 1800s than going out and catching a fucking whale. Cause like, dude, the boats from the 18, like that's insane to have a boat and the technology to be able to capture. I know that Moby Dick's a thing, but like that's crazy as fuck.
We've been doing boat stuff for a while by that point. And it was obviously like sailboats, but I'm saying like, you know, we had some old salts, dude, some salty dogs, some nautical ass motherfuckers who knew how to get down.
We did.
Get up to some ocean business, and that's up to and including, you know, killing all the whales.
Speaking of which, I want to ask you an age-old question that I don't know if we've talked about on here, but I was watching, for the first time, actually, Master and Commander of the Far Side of the World the other day.
Yeah, how'd that go? Because I only saw that movie once when it first came out. And people talk about it like it's absolutely fucking incredible. It's an adaptation of a book series that's apparently a huge series that's supposed to hit real hard. It's historical fiction, and I've meant to revisit that, and I just haven't.
Yeah, it's great.
And, okay.
I mean, here's the deal with me, and I think you know this. when I'm a fan of one or two actors in a thing, it's immediately going to elevate me no matter what. Like, and to me, Russell Crowe and Paul Bettany are two of my favorite actors of all time.
Yeah,
I mean, they could be in a dog shit movie and I'm definitely still going to like see it. And probably even if it sucks, enjoy just watching these two people talk for 2 hours. But you know, dude, I love fucking war epics and sea shit. So like, I thought it was great. And there was a lot more humor than I expected. I mean, it wasn't like a fucking comedy, but there was a lot more humor than I expected.
I believe that came out around the same time the first Pirates of the Caribbean did and got utterly destroyed as a result of it, which is why they never made any more of those movies, despite the fact that it was like, you know, Pirates of the Caribbean's a fucking carnival ride. That's a like a good movie, you know.
Yeah,
but
well, that's the reason that I never...
In the box office.
Yeah, that's the reason that I never saw it was because I used to be more of a snob and like, you know, I knew that it didn't do like I remember when it came out thinking like
a snob would turn his nose up at the Pirates movie and be like, this is the real art.
Okay, I was a reverse snob. I was a reverse snob at that time. I was like, if it didn't make a lot of money, it didn't hit. Then I switched, you know, out of the, but like when I heard something was a box office bomb, I assumed, oh, well, it didn't hit. Because if it hit...
Well, a lot of them don't, for the record.
Yeah, no, I know.
But some of them do.
But anyways, in that movie, they were talking about... this is off the subject here, but we're talking about ships. In the movie, he's talking about how he'd been with that ship for a long time, and they'd had to replace all this shit and blah, 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 blah. Do you think if... Because this gets asked a lot. If you're on a ship for 20 fucking years and at that point, none of the parts are original, is that the same ship?
So Theseus is on this ship. This is the ship of Theseus you're talking about.
Cause it happens in rock bands too sometimes.
Yeah. I don't know. I think it's an interesting question. It's like, I feel like if a ship is crewed for 20 straight years, especially if like one guy's on it the whole time, but over the years, it has been worked on so much that none of the original parts are there, but they've been consistently crewing it as the Santa Maria or whatever it's called and all that. Then, I mean, yeah, it's the same boat.
I agree with you.
And I guess if you got a band, even if all the members are different, if they're playing the same songs and they sound the same way, it's songs made famous by that band. Hell, I guess it's still that band, you know?
Okay. What about Skinner?
Well, I mean,
I was setting you up, dude.
Different, I feel like.
That's different.
That was, you know,
but it's the same thing.
Accident. They died unexpectedly, and then the others carried on and, you know, sort of went a little bit of a different way over the years. So
her daddy was a whaler, and he amassed a pretty good fortune. And so Hetty received actually a really good education, which was super uncommon for women in, you know, the 1830s, 1840s. But what she really got into was the financial aspect of her father's business. Like, she was getting schooled, but like, she was like watching him and like learning as she went. Like, she opened on her own. She went to her dad and was like, at 6 years old, and was like, I want to open up a bank account he's like, oh, I'll give you all the money that you need. And she's like, I know that, but I want it to be in an account that I manage so that I can see how that works and shit. And so she does this, learns how to manage her own money, and by 13, she's running basically her father's operation. Like, he's still alive, but she's such a fucking savant at math, at money, at investments and everything that at 13, she's running, you know, fucking everything. So when he dies, she obviously inherits a significant amount from him, but before he dies, she was a pretty girl. And so he sends her, he's like, I'm going to send you to New York because it's time for you to marry a man. Preferably, you know, one who hits, you know, cause that's how, as we've talked about on this show, what's wrong?
If people are watching, they're going to see me jump very weirdly, very nebbishly.
Cold
I
chill.
Suppose. No, your audio, I don't know if it'll come through in the your audio fucked up for a minute for me.
Anyway. Oh, I'm sorry.
It spiked real hard.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's going to do that on the actual
recording or if it was just my headphones or what, but it like spiked and scared me. Got to jump.
I'm very sorry. And I sure hope it doesn't show up on the regular recording. But anyways, you know, you would think it's like, if you're super rich and you're going to inherit all this stuff and y'all, I mean, they're rich. Like, I think that her father's fortune was like sitting at $5 million in 1830 something, which we're talking, that's $75-100 million easily. Yeah. That you would go, well, okay, she's fine. She can marry for love, but they don't do that. Like, their whole thing is like, you marry someone else that hits, we combine our fortune, and then Tywin Lannister, legacy. So she's like, he's like, all right. She's like, all right, I'll go, but just to let you know, I'm not really interested in any of that. He's like, go, and I'm going to give you $1,200 as your allowance to get you started in New York. Well, being who she is, she took the $1,200, invested $1,000 of it in railroad bonds, and lived like a couple years just on $200 because she's like, I know I can do this. She was a very, very frugal person. And that's going to be something that comes up a lot during this podcast. And something that I want to talk about is there are certain people who I don't understand why they even want to have money.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because they live as if they do not. So she was known as a miser. You know, we've heard that be talked about with Ebenezer Scrooge.
Yeah.
And normally I'm like, however you want to live your life, that's fine. But there's a couple reasons where she very much does not hit because of
okay.
it.
Okay.
So, yeah, and I'll get into that. So not only that, but he wanted her to look really good. So he gave her what is in today's money, $30,000 worth of clothes. She sold every single bit of that too, invested in she had put some money in railroad bonds, but what she did this time was the Civil War had just happened and greenbacks were a thing for the first time. Like Civil War bonds, which was like American currency, you know, the Confederacy had theirs, and then greenbacks come out and it's like, this is a money. This is how we're paying for shit. The government's printing a lot of it. Well, I don't know if you know this, but those actually didn't do well from the jump. Like they weren't backed by anything. It was just kind of like, this is money, but she buys a bunch of them while people are talking about how worthless they are because she's just like, I know that was like kind of a thing for her is that she would search out things that everybody thought was worthless because her philosophy was most people are idiots. So whatever everybody's thinking about, I'm going to do the opposite of that. So she invests in all these greenbacks. She gets like $30,000 worth of greenbacks. And then a couple years later, Ulysses S. Grant becomes president and he backs all these greenbacks by gold. Yeah. He backs all of them by gold and they fucking go through the roof. So
that came up before, but it had nothing to do with this lady.
Yep. Like, I can't remember what it was, but
the Ulysses S. Grant doing that, what you just said, that was relevant to some other story that got told on this podcast before. Yeah. It had nothing to do
that
with,
sounded familiar.
With Green or whatever, but I can't remember the specifics of the other story now.
It's funny you say that because when I read that, I remembered that we'd talked about it and I actually scrolled through our podcast feed to make sure that I hadn't talked about her. But then I got to a certain point and I was like, I definitely never have talked about that. So, She does end up marrying. She marries this guy named Edward Henry Green. Thus, her name is Hetty Green. He was a wealthy businessman. They had two kids. They got Edward. It goes by Ned. They've got Sylvia. So he was like, all right, he was wealthy. He wasn't necessarily on her level, but like he had seemingly a good mind for business. And her dad was always like, before he died, he was always like, look, a bunch of these motherfuckers are going to come at you for your money. And that's why it's important that you get with somebody that hits. And even if you get with somebody that hits, it's probably still going to be that case. And he left her with a quote, which is like so fucking Ebenezer Scrooge. He said, never give anyone anything, not even a kindness. And so she, not even a kindness.
Family wisdom.
Yep. And dude, she fucking took that to heart.
Took it to heart.
She took that absolutely to heart. So her husband
kicking orphans in the leg on her way back home from the fucking factory she owned.
We're definitely going to talk about we're definitely going to talk about orphans and poorhouses later, but not in a way that you would think. So she marries this dude, and he was a good businessman, but once he's married to her, he gets like, he's like way more cavalier about stuff because he's like, God damn, like, we really got it, you know? So he starts making these kind of asinine business deals, and in his brain, he's like, okay, I'm taking this big risk, but like, if it doesn't work out, it's totally fine because my wife is worth way more than me and she will underwrite my debt. So he tells all these people, he's like, hey, don't worry about it. We're going to do this thing. And like, listen, if it fails, this is how much money my wife has. And they're like, gee, golly willikers, that's more money than I'd done ever heard of, you know? And he's like, she'll assume this debt. She'll pay it off. Well, he does a bunch of this shit, like without telling her. And then when it comes down to it, she's like, the fuck, I will not do that even a little bit. She also, by the way, I didn't even know this was the thing back then. When they got married, she had him sign a prenup. She, in the 1860s, had this motherfucker sign a prenup. Ain't that wild?
Yeah. Yeah, I would have thought a lawyer would have just been like, yeah, how quaint that you think we would do something. I don't know why I'm doing that accent. This is all in America, right? Anyway.
Yeah, but like, no, you're right.
Bitch, get out of here. We don't do that.
Yeah. Yeah, but no. But like, there's so many things that she does that I can't believe someone didn't go, you know, you're a woman, right?
Right, yeah.
But so not only does she not agree to underwrite his debt, she was like, now that I know that you don't hit at business, I can't be with you anymore. You know, I can't do it. Like she, and from all records, like she still thought he was a great man. He was super kind. He was a great father. She was just embarrassed at how much he didn't hit at business.
Too money dumb, right?
Yeah, too money dumb, because that's the only thing she gave a fuck about. And like, regardless of all these things that I'm about to say about her later, she was unbelievable at money. I mean, she inherited a fortune from her dad. However, if you're not a money smart person, you will go through that money pretty quick. You definitely won't increase it by 20-fold. Dude. You know what I'm saying? Like, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying like, God damn, what an impressive person that pulled themselves up by their bootstrap. Clearly that's not true. But again, if you turn any amount of money into a shit ton more of money, you know what you're doing. You know what I mean? Because like, you give me $20 million right now, next year I'll have $10 million. Yeah, you know what I mean? like, I don't know how none of that shit works. Like, dude, there were so many times I wanted to look up stuff in this, but like, I was like, I'll just ask Trey, like, do you know what a fucking bond is? Like, what is that? Like, I've heard of them. Like, you get bonds. What the fuck is that?
I believe it's like where the government, it's like a money rate, a capital raising measure for the government, I think, where they issue bonds, people buy them. And people buy them, which means they pay the government money for this like piece of paper that's a bond, right? Now the government has that money, so they raise that money, and usually it's war bonds or whatever. They raise a bunch of money to do a bunch of war shit. But that's backed by the U.S. government, so it's a very safe investment, right? So they'll pay, and then the government will pay you dividends on the bonds you owe or whatever, you know, over that time, and you are pretty assured that like the government's not going to fail or whatever, like, which means that like your money will be safe there. That's very rudimentary, and I'm trashing money dumb too, but it's like something like that is basically
maybe I'm a conspiracy theorist, but like in my mind, I'd be like, well, the last person I want to have all my money is the goddamn government, because they could just do anything with it and then not pay me back and then put me in a gulag and keep me silent. You know what I mean?
Yeah, theoretically, sure.
I mean, am I being QAnon here? But like that, you know,
a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah, because a lot of these people, they always try to hide their money from the government, is what I'm saying. Like, she fucking never paid taxes.
Right. Yeah. It's just another like type of investment thing or whatever, though. You know what I mean? And like, the government's not gonna like, it's going to try not to defraud its own citizens, generally speaking. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, because if that shit starts happening, then you in trouble. Like, like as a government, I mean, like, and you know, it all,
that's true,
the wheels come off pretty quick if you start doing some shit like that. So,
yeah, that's true. And I guess I'll jump forward a little bit, because I just said that she didn't pay her taxes. And when I heard that, I was like, okay, you can do a lot of shit in this country and you won't get in trouble for it if you're rich, but that's not one of them. Like, you know, I mean,
well, it depends. Whole lot of them don't pay any taxes at all, but it's because they get know through the loopholes.
Yeah, from what I read, she said, fuck
she
that.
pulled a young thug to Uncle Sam, fucking him. Fuck him. I ain't paying him.
Yeah. Now, one thing that was like, I guess a loophole that she figured out was like, she moved all the time. She was
young thug in jail now, ain't he? Or very close to it.
I believe that song got brought up in court, Trey.
Yeah.
Word for word.
Yeah, right.
The judge said, is it true that you said, Uncle Sam,
fuck him, I ain't paying him.
Yeah.
N-word what? Yeah, I remember when I read that, it's like, it hit super hard for me, but I was like, I don't know if that's going to work out, that. Thugger.
Like, said that.
It's a bold strategy.
But she would move from district to district before the tax bill from said district came. You know what I mean? She would live in one place and then would be out of there by the time they were like, hey, you have property taxes or whatever the fuck it is to live here. And that's the thing is that she actually, aside from a lot of rich people who were like, I would never rent. Renting is throwing your money away, which like, I mean, it 100% is like it's an easy thing to say when you have the money to pay for a house. But everybody knows that like that is just a true thing. When you rent, like you are just throwing your money away. It's just that some people can't afford not to throw your money away. Because if you've told me a bunch and it's just true, being poor costs a fuck ton of money. It costs so much money to be poor. And when you're rich, it's not that hard. Like, it's not that hard at all. Uh-uh. Like, there's so many like, you get paid money just to be rich.
It's,
you
know, so
like,
true.
It's so true. You do. Like, not to get political on this show, but, like, I remember reading something one time where they were talking about Donald Trump's net worth. And they were like, you realize that if all the money his daddy gave him, if he'd have literally done nothing
with it,
he would have been worth more.
Right.
Because, like, that's a thing. You can just... if you're rich, you can go here, I'll put it here, and that shit will make me money. Mm-hmm. So this is getting into the part where I was talking about of like some people that make a lot of money, I don't even know why, because they don't use it to make their life any better. She constantly moved round and round, and she wasn't staying in like high-rise luxury apartments. She would try to stay in government housing. Like, she would do her, and then they would find out who she was and was like, she would like lie about being poor and shit. And then they would be like, you can't do this. So she would go to seedy hotels and pay like a quarter a day and shit like this. And this is all, she's got kids. If this was just her, I'd be like, whatever, that's your thing. But like, she's got fucking kids and she's basically making them live in squalor because she's too stingy to spend any of her fucking money. So it's not only that, there's this one story. I forgot to say something about her dad. When her dad died on his deathbed, he told her, he like grabbed her by the neck and was like, I was poisoned and it's going to happen to you next.
Okay. Like
that's what he said. And so because of that, hold on just a second. Let me readjust my headphones. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. My shit was going in and out. So when he says that he was poisoned and that she was going to be next, she took that to heart. And for the next like 3 to 4 years, the only thing she ate was hard boiled eggs because she thought that would be impossible to poison.
Okay.
You know what I mean? She was like, if I see my egg.
Her butt stank, boy.
Yeah. Oh, dude. So much of her stank. And I'll get into that in a minute. She was one of the stinkiest bitches that has ever walked this earth. Wasn't a hippie. She was stinkier than most hippies, I would say, even though she was far from a hippie. Because in her brain, she was like, well, if I see an egg and there's not a hole in it, they couldn't have poisoned my eggs. So, like, that's all she did. So, yada, yada, yada. She's living in government housing and shit. She only took public transportation, which is weird because, like, this is a person who constantly believes that she's going to be assassinated. You know what I mean? But she refuses to pay for like people to drive her around. There was this one time her and this dude were like having a meeting or whatever. And like she gets him on the train and she's got a briefcase and in it is at the time, not adjusted for inflation, at the time, $200,000 that she's got on her. And he's like, are you fucking crazy? And she's like, what are you talking about? And he's like, you can't just walk around with $200,000 on you. And she looks at this motherfucker and is like, oh, well, I'm glad that you can afford private transportation, but some of us don't have that luxury. Saying this as unequivocally the richest woman in the entire world. But that's just how, and you know, a lot of people go, well, that's how the rich stay rich. They don't spend any of their money. Yeah, and again, but again, I go back to, then what's the fucking point?
Right. Well, dude, I mean, I think with this lady, like, this is mental illness.
I kind of feel bad for some of it.
This is some kind of compulsive disorder or something like that, where it's like she has to make money. She cannot spend any of it. And it's like, you know, the just cheap ass rich dudes who don't tip, but they have a hidden car. You know what I mean? That type of thing. That's just being a rich prick. And people are like, oh, well, how do you think they got to be rich or whatever? But this is a whole nother level. This lady's something was wrong with her.
Yeah, that's true. Now you're kind of making me feel bad for shitting on her.
Wow, fuck her. She long dead and didn't hit, you know.
I think I'm going to get to a point in here where you go, okay, yes, fuck her. I hope so. Well, after all this, she marries this other feller who she really liked, but he died. You know, he died. And so she went into mourning. While she was in mourning, she realized something about it. While she was in mourning, she realized that black clothes were cheaper to clean. She's like, well, goddamn. You know, they don't show stains as much. These are way easier. And when you wash them, they don't bleed like all these fancy colors and shit. So she decided that she was going to stick with wearing a black dress every day for the rest of her life. By the way, Trey, I don't mean a series of black dresses.
No,
I mean the same goddamn dress every day. And not only that, she did not clean it. She would on occasion clean it, but what she did, and by the way, she negotiated everything. She never once spent full price on anything. If somebody refused to negotiate with her, she just wouldn't get it. So she's worth billions of fucking dollars in today's money. But if she's going to buy an apple from a local vendor, she's like, I'll give you 2 pennies and nothing less. And if they were like, I can't afford that, ma'am, she was like, fuck you. I hope you die. I'm going to go eat a hard boiled egg. You know? So what she would do was, when she would go get her dress cleaned, she would only request that they cleaned the hem of it, because that's where all the dirt and stuff was, right? And she would negotiate with the cleaner. She's like, you're not cleaning the whole dress, so I'm not paying you full price. Even though they would be like, listen, it takes the same stuff to do that. But she wouldn't do it. She's like, if you clean this hem, I'm giving you, that's 1/16 of the dress. I'm giving you 1/16 of the money. Now, obviously, that was not the only part of her fucking dress that was dirty, right? Because this woman was also, aside from the hard-boiled eggs, she lived on a diet of raw onions too, because she thought that was good for her health. There's fucking raw onions getting all over her dress. And just that when a woman back then wore a dress, she also had a petticoat under it, a goddamn this shit. She was sweating her fucking ass off.
Of course.
She stank so bad that people that worked for her in her office would stay at the furthest corner of the office away from her, because it was just horrible. There was literally mold on her dress walking around from where she wouldn't clean it. So they would stay away from her. But by the way, Trey, this wasn't actually her office, because getting her own office would cost money, right? So what she would do is that every week she would get a new office by going to a bank that she held a lot of money in, right? And she would go there and be like, I need to use one of y'all's offices this week. And if you don't let me, I'll take all of my fucking money out of your bank. And they, of course, were just like, okay. So, and she would do this, she had 13 different banks that she had money in. So she would rotate week by week these fucking offices. This is how this woman lives. So, like I said, she didn't have a permanent home. She lives in cheap motels. So here, though, is where her frugality really pisses me off. When her child, her son, Ned, when he was 9 years old, he fucked up his leg. He broke it, and there was a cut, right? And so he requires medical attention. He's screaming. His leg is broke. He's fucking 9. But she's like, okay. So she disguised herself and went to a free clinic trying to get free care for his leg. Well, they knew who she was, and they were like, you know, Mrs. Green, this is for the downtrodden. This is for the poor. You can literally afford the best medical care in the city for your child. And wouldn't you want that? And she was like, nah. So she just let the boy's leg heal on its own. And yeah, he got gangrene and they had to amputate the leg.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
You'll have that. Yeah, you will have that. So they agree.
I'm sure she was like, look at all these other 9-year-olds limping around with dirt on their face. He'll be fine. It's a now, thing right now. Hell, yeah, they're in books.
Now, to her credit, it wasn't just her son's health that she was flipping about. It was also her own. She had a hernia, and she let the hernia go for years untreated until she literally couldn't walk, and she had to do something about it. And the reason that she wouldn't do anything about it, at one point she goes in to do something about it, and they were like, you're going to have surgery. That'll be $150. And she said that she could not afford that. There was just no way that she could afford $150. That was ridiculous. Finally, when it got so bad that she couldn't walk, she had the surgery, right? But she had her kid's leg was fucking amputated. She got mold on her fucking dress. She eventually passed away in 1916 after having several strokes that she did not get any help for at all. Uh-huh. You just fucking having strokes. She left all the money to her son and daughter, to Ned and what was her name? Sylvia. None of those things. Ned and Sylvia. Sylvia, who was a sweet girl, took all of the money. She married a guy who did well, and so she took all. They split this fortune, which, by the way, in today's money, is estimated to be anywhere between $2 billion and $5 billion. So real money, not some chump 100 millionaire. You know what I mean? Like, dude, $2 and $5 billion makes so many rich people that we know of look like peasant motherfuckers. Mm-hmm. Like, do you think that someone who has $2 billion looks down on someone that has one?
Yeah,
for sure.
1 billion, I don't know, but like 600 million, yeah.
Yeah, 100%, right?
You know what I mean? Yeah.
Yeah, so they leave this fortune to them. They split it. So these kids are getting, you know, conservatively $1 billion apiece. Sylvia, gives every single bit of the money to charity. She's like, I don't need it. I got a guy. And she's like, I don't really like the way that my mom did these things. I think this money should go to help people. Ned, with his one leg ass in a wheelchair, he spent the rest of his days flossing his ass off.
Well, that's all right.
Oh, it's fucking great. I'm proud of him, dude. Yeah. His mom took away his fucking normal life. You know what I mean? And he was like, dude, fuck all this. So, and he wasn't a bad guy, but he spent his money on getting hot women, buying yachts, buying real estate. But like, the thing is that when he had also put some of that money in bonds and made considerable investments along the way. So when he died, he actually still had left almost what the actual fortune was. You know what I mean? Because as I said, money begets money with rich people, as long as you're not stupid about it. And then when he died, all that money went to his sister Sylvia, and she gave all of that away to charity. So the woman who was taught never give anyone anything, not even a kindness, still had all of her fortune given away to charities and hospitals after she died.
Which is,
and that is Hetty Green, aka I didn't even say why she was the Witch of Wall Street. She was the Witch of Wall Street for several reasons, but when she started wearing all black, that's really when it cemented as she was the Witch of Wall Street. Yes, yeah. Witch Stankin. So that's Hetty Green. A very interesting. I cannot believe that fucking Meryl Streep has not played her in a movie. Right. I mean, Meryl Streep played, like, because it kind of gives me Devil Wears Prada vibes, except for like even worse. You know what I mean? So a very interesting figure from the Gilded Age.
I like it. Hit for me.
Well, thank you, Trey. Thank you for
thank
listening.
Thank you for that.
Yeah. Would you like to do some airmail? Airmail.
Sure, yeah. Why not?
Okay. We've got a couple Let me go to him. Do you heard the thing about where the Beatles jacked off in front of each other?
No. Is that in the airmail?
No. I was just wondering because we were doing a sort of poll. or Ringo.
Can we save it for later? You think you remember that next week? Because I actually have something that's sort of relevant for that. Weirdly.
Yeah, okay. We'll remember. Anyway. Yeah, okay. This is subject Mozart. By the way, guys, I forget to say it sometimes. You can send us airmail by going to puttingonairs@gmail.com. Sending us whatever. And I'm so glad that my plea for more limericks was answered by the Airhead Nation. Hey, Trey and Corey, I'm a big fan of the Skooniverse, and I also happen to be a classical musician. I wonder if I'm the only inhabitant of that Venn diagram. Yeah, so I love probably. That you... probably, yeah. I don't know if... who's the cello feller that I met that one time? Yo-Yo Ma. I don't know if Yo-Yo Ma's listening to the podcast.
Yeah, probably not.
So I love that you talked about Mozart and his fondness for poop and fart jokes last week. You inspired me to write this limerick. There once was a maestro named Wolfie who sang Lick My Ass in a low key. His tunes were high art, even ones about farts, and he won every musical trophy. I love that.
Nice.
Other than Mozart, classical composers aren't known for their humor, but here are a couple others that might be interesting POA fodder nonetheless. J.S. Bach, 1685 to 1750, he once got arrested for being drunk and disorderly, and he fathered 20 children. Eric Satie, 1866 to 1925, he wouldn't eat any food that wasn't white, and he wrote a very funny explanation of this and other eccentric habits. He also wrote a piano piece where one short phrase gets repeated 840 times, and it takes more than 18 hours to play. Karl Heinz Stockhausen, 1928 to 2007. I did not see that guy dying after Chingy's first album came out. rumor has it that he believed he was from another planet and he was just generally bug fuck insane. He wrote a string quartet where each of the four musicians have to ride in separate helicopters while performing together via video. Thank you for the many hours of enjoyment you bring, and I hope you'll come perform in Michigan sometimes. Love ya, Linda. It's okay to use my name. Glad I read that. Okay.
Hell yeah.
Subject line, listen up, motherfuckers, in all caps, and a limerick. Hi, y'all. The last time I wrote to y'all, you bitched about how long my email was, so I'm going to try to keep it short here. I'm from Pennsylvania, and I used to live in South Korea, but I moved back to the States to take a job in Connecticut a few months ago. It's been a weird adjustment. I keep randomly bowing or responding to people in Korean, but I turned one of my new coworkers into a POA. Jesus, I'm sorry. Hi, Kristen. She's the mom in our office, and I love getting to hear her thoughts on the earlier episodes. She just heard y'all arguing about squirrels, and she said she almost had to pull her car over when Trey was talking about paying his own child support because she was laughing so hard. Now I'd like to share a limerick I wrote inspired by my time in Korea. There once was a very small child whose parents assumed she was wild. So they put her in school, which she did not think was cool, and I've never, not once, seen her smile. See, this child was born in Korea, and her parents were not quite agreeable to the subject she studied, and so her motives were muddied, but at least her college is free-a. Maybe this limerick is a little bit shitty, and I don't think it'd make sense as a ditty, but at the end of the day, we all want to play, and there ain't nothing to do in this city. Life sucks a lot, but y'all make it a little funnier. Love yous like chicken. Giant flying spaghetti monster, bless y'all. Please don't use my last name. Allie.
Hey, Allie. Thank you.
Thank you all. That was,
yeah. Back to back. Or just that's one right. Big ass one. I don't know how the rules work, but either way, I was impressed.
That was really nice. Yeah, we'll end with that one. I've got a couple more we'll save for next week, but they are very, 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 very long. Y'all can email us. And that's fine. Y'all can email us, puttingonairs@gmail.com. We really wish, as we say a lot, if you love it. And by the way, thank you, Allie, for turning Kristen on the POA. We do think that that's the best way. We can share stuff all we want, but word of mouth is great. If you like this show, it stands to reason that someone with similar interest, aka your friend, would like this show as well. I would also like, if you don't mind, to go to parttimefunnyman.com and subscribe to my Substack where I do bonus stuff. And Trey, you've got some exciting things, correct?
TreyCrowder.com, see tickets and watch my special Damn Boy on YouTube. But yeah, I got a lot of dates coming up later this year and in 2024, and I'm still adding many more all the time, so come and see me.
TreyCrowder.com. Or you can go to patreon.com/TreyCrowder if you don't want to do that. Or you can do both. Get some bonus shit from me and watch weekly skews and all that stuff. That'll do it.
And pre-order our book. You can pre-order our book.
Pre-order our book.
Go to our socials. Yeah. And we can put it in the description to here.
Yes. And also, Dale, we need to remember, we need to add that to my website too. I don't know
if I'll get
it done by Friday, but yeah. So at some point, also on TreyCrowder.com, there'll be a link to the book.
That's right. And as always, we encourage you to stay fancy.
Stay fancy.
Motherfuckers.
Motherfuckers.
Skew.
Skew. Here's Lydia Loveless.
1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. Royalty and rednecks are alike. They both like cutting and picking fights. Biscuits and baked beans where they don't belong. Sit on down with Corey and Trey and learn some fancy shit today. We'll laugh a little even when they're wrong. They'll take you to a magical place where if you call someone a cunt, nobody cares. They keep it debonair at putting on airs, putting on airs, putting on airs.